Abbiamo incontrato Shilpa Gupta in occasione di Second Moon, la sua prima personale italiana alla Galleria Continua di San Gimignano. Un percorso espositivo il suo che intreccia aspettative personali e aspirazioni collettive, utopie disattese e chiusure individualistiche, memoria e proiezione al cambiamento, controllo sociale e forze periferiche che inevitabilmente sono destinate a rompere le strutture sociali ed economiche attuali. Di tutto questo abbiamo parlato a partire dei lavori esposti in galleria, da Memory 2 all'ultimo inedito Untitled It Panels, ma anche del ruolo dell'artista come soggetto di cambiamento sociale e del rapporto tra tecnologia, controllo di massa e affermazione delle singole individualità. L'intervista è in inglese.
My name is Shilpa and I'm an artist in Bombay. It's my first time that I'm doing a solo show in Italy. Starting from the work outside Gallery Continua, it is this piece called Memory, which is this text memory that's carved into a wall. And when you look through it, you see the sky. And when you walk around it, you see it in the reverse. It's something about the memory being a hole in the brain and how much of memory does one remember and how do we choose to exclude it, not just memory, but memory as in our minds, but memory which could be mapped onto a nation or onto the geography or across the class or, you know, various structures. And it's also got to do with something else. It has to do with the memory which exists in our minds and how much we know. It has to do with consciousness and about the scientific fact that only 10% of what we know in our, what we know as human beings is in our minds and our consciousness is only 10%, and there's a larger 90% that operates in the subconscious, and that's where researchers have proved that prejudice or other such things sort of thrive. And so the work's kind of related to that, yeah. That's a very beautiful connection. You know, like that's maybe a connection which sometimes the viewer is able to make between the aerial state and the solid structure, which the artist doesn't know happens in the mind in my other 90% maybe. And, but yeah, it's really about, you know, like I have been working on There Is No Border Here, or this whole thing of sort of dividing regions or areas, geographies, or into places. And here there is a wall that's cut through. And to sort of say that you can't really cut through, because, I mean, every place, from when do you cut through? And it has a past, and the past has a memory. And that memory, pre the division, is a shared memory. So it has to do with the solidness of division and the impossibility of division.
Jawaharlal Nehru, 1889 to 1964. Speech on the granting of Indian independence, August 14, 1947. Long years ago, we made a tryst with destiny, and now the time comes when we shall redeem our pledge, not wholly or in full
measure. Tryst with destiny, it's a speech it's a microphone, which there has been this crazy reversal where instead of microphone is an object where you talk through and you speak. But here there is in a corner at the end of the corridor stands this microphone, and it's all alone. And on the wall there is a text which says a modern history source book, and says it's the speech of Nehru. And the font size is very small, 6, which is difficulty of reading. Again, the difficulty of understanding. And in that, I am singing the speech. Well, not just singing, I'm also singing and talking and remembering and forgetting the speech of independence. And it's from 1947, about 60 years ago. And it's somehow also referring to the impossibility of a nation, and how we've sort of walked so many years down the line. And in this speech, you have a utopic dream of wanting to have evenness across class. And, you know, we talk about everybody's free to practice whatever religion. But recently, we've had like a lot of violence in the past 10 years on the basis of religion. Or we've had bombings from people, or we've had who are protesting about freedom for their state within India. Or there's a lot of unrest within the interiors of the country. The Naxalites, it's the left armed Maoist movements in various villages and against the state government, which the Prime Minister says is the biggest problem for the country, more than terrorism is. So it's really sort of, it's kind of sad and melancholic, and wondering that how can we ever achieve those dreams of equality, of freedom, under the construct of a nation.
Nevertheless, the past is over, and it is the future that beckons to us now. The service of India means the service of the millions who suffer. The service of India means the service of millions who suffer.
In this space, in Gallery Continua, when I was asked to show works, and I was very keen that I want to show I Have Many Dreams and I want to show Trist, because I'm also showing in another space. But I wanted to, the reason I had to show Trist next to I Have Many Dreams is for the contrast. You know, it's about the seesaw between the personal and the political, and what is the relationship between the individual as individual and aspirations, as versus the nation and the nation and its aspirations. Somewhere also in Heru's speech, and though it's quite poetic and superbly well written, there is almost like a childlike dream of wanting a country to be so free and so equal and so, and in the same way, it's the girls who want to, you know, if you actually listen to the audio, it's just a coincidence, and a really, I was shocked with this coincidence that when I had interviewed like some 11 girls, and there are 4 out here, and I asked them what do they want to be when they grow up. So I keep asking them, they say something, and I say, no, but what if you don't get to be this, what is your next option? And they go on, and I say, if you don't get to be this, what is your next option? And it's such a coincidence, all the young girls like whom I interviewed, they all wanted to be either artists, or they wanted to be doctors, or they wanted to be teachers. They all wanted to do something good. It was all about either a sense of freedom or a sense of goodness. And then when the third or the fourth or the fifth option be, oh, then we'll be a banker, or we'll be a, you know, engineer, or we will do this like our fathers or like our brothers. But the first few options are almost so much to do with expressing the self. So I found it really, I mean, not just the fact that it's the individual versus the political, but there is an unusual overlap between the aspirational state of it.
And I'm 10. And when I grow up, I want to be a teacher. I want to be a teacher because, like, whenever my teacher teaches us in school, I feel it's also fun teaching, writing on the blackboard and all. And my teacher never allows us to write. And that's why I want to be a teacher.
I'm Avantika, and I'm 12 years old.
Okay, Avantika, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be an architect. I want to be an interior designer because I don't know, I just love making things out of my own creation and building houses, and I not exactly in engineering, but the interiors of a house.
A doctor.
Why?
Because it's very interesting, like helping people, and if they aren't well, so, and it's very interesting, like, to, if you're giving a surgery or an operation or something.
Do you have a second choice?
Actually, not yet decided, but maybe an artist.
What kind of artist?
Painting.
Okay, suppose you don't get to be an artist then.
Then,
hi, my name's Adya, and my age is, I'm going to be 11. I want to grow up and become an artist because I love drawing, and I can spend as many hours drawing because
I have another work which has young boys, but I'm actually, this has to also do with the girls are all friends of my 11-year-old cousin, and I have a lot of cousin sisters, and I often see them at this unusual state which all of us go through of suddenly growing up. And I find that 11-year-old is a, you know, where women are grown up and they are still very small, and I like that state. Like, you all, it's this, you know, it's such a dual state to be in. And so that's why also, and it's mapped more easily on girls. Boys, I take longer to grow up.
Third choice. Actually, I don't have a third choice, but I'm very sure of myself and I have faith in myself that I'm going to become one of these.
And it's actually also a part of a reality. Like, you know, we have this page 3, Bombay Times page 3. It is like the third page of a society where which everybody wakes up and they hate it, but they see it. And they see all the parties of last night. And where comes the fashion shows and all the fancy things, all the cool things and clubs and partying and who went where and who wore what, which bag they carried. And young girls today at 11 years old, they actually throw parties of Miss World and fashion show, and then they take pictures of each other on cell phones. So I heard about this and I almost fell off my chair thinking, oh my God, you, like I was telling my cousin, you actually do this. And I became more and more fascinated, and also the state I've always been interested in. So these young girls who are all dressed up, have been dressed up because they were going for a invited for a party called the Page 3 party. So that's when they dress up to be older women, and it's very alive. So that's why they are kind of dressed up to be this. So when I was photographing them, and they all got pictures like a Page 3 party. They all got their pictures, and but I try to capture the moment where there is that sense of confidence but deep sense of vulnerability also. So it's, yeah, it's coming from there. I mean, somehow it gets, but yeah, the fact they're girls, it's, yeah, I have a young girl cousin. You know, the relationship of the self with technology is really, really, really a big question. I mean, if we were to just reverse into past and not think of technology as today, but think of what technology was, or of how Edison, maybe suddenly we had light, or suddenly we were able to travel to a country. So on the same ship that went to, say, the colonies, not only did it bring back pepper, but it also brought back slaves. So it's. I mean, we don't, if we look at far away, so technology is, or what also comes to our mind, to my mind, is how McLuhan talks about technology being an extension of the body. But I think, like he says, it's simultaneously an extension and it is simultaneously an amputation. So it is something truly that we as human beings have desired. We are awed by it. It's beautiful. It's sensuous. It is perversive also. But it is about the self. I mean, I am truly fascinated, and I question and I wonder and I work around this in several of the shadow pieces also. There are these interactive video projections where you walk and you see yourself inside it, that there is a world out there, and how technology is, because technology today is the way how we exchange information, democratic, like the more mass-produced information via the television or the internet, it is the filter for that. And how that filter today is controlled by various corporate or political, you know, interfaces. And then because it is controlled by that interface, it is a filter, which means what comes to us is what we see, but there's also a part that we don't see. I mean, the self and technology is a really big question, and it's fascinating, it's a need, but it's not all evil. I mean, because it could be easy to say it's all bad, you know, all of this. But I find it very fascinating that we, though we think it's not so nice, but the fact is that today young kids will chat to you, and they will SMS, and they will have the phone, and they're doing 6 things today, and they do it with great pleasure. So, you know, it's just fascinating that there is this great desire to be consumed by it and to consume it. So it's quite interesting. You can sit on a sofa and you can on the TV watch US bomb Iraq and not feel pain at all. and it's terribly scary. And you know, I mean, there are books written about this. You know, I met Noam Chomsky for one project, and I interviewed him, and I asked him that, do you think people like to be programmed? And he was rather optimistic. This is somebody who's written so much about media and culture. And he said, no, people don't like to be programmed. And there are people always protest. And youth culture today is a great demonstration of that. That we who've probably become adults like in the past 8-10 years may not think of it as protest in a particular way. But every 16 or 14-year-old, which is a shifting area, everybody goes through it. But youth culture is a great way of how the society is protesting again and again in various times. So yes, there is technology which is out there to consume, but I guess, I don't know, he seems more optimistic. I'm not as optimistic, and I think the question is too large, and I don't know whether I can answer the many dimensions. I'm as fascinated and confused about it, yeah. A lot of my work is about various repetitive concerns which are always there, which is about media. One of them, like the mic, which is talking to itself because nobody's listening. So there's a reversal of the media. Here are people who are walking in straight lines. In this piece, the mechanical cues, 100 cues. We photographed 100 cues in the city of Bombay. And it is cues at bus stops, cues at in front of state governments, cues at weddings, cues in schools. So it's really about people queuing. And then it has to do, again, with the previous question about how much in technology is the self, because in queuing, you sort of repeat what the person in front of you is doing, and therefore there's a loss of information transfer, there's a loss that takes place. So in this, there's a great loss, and everybody is going backwards. So there is this, the queues, instead of moving in forward, they're all slowly with motors, which are all exposed, which is part of the project to expose the motors because it's a comment on technology. They're all rotating backwards. Over the past year or so, I have been more and more interested in the structure. A lot of the previous works were got to do with saying there is no border, or there is talking about with great vigor about the impossibilities of borders. But now I'm sort of more and more interested in the construct of the democracy, which is very young, and how whether people can be divided into these structures as a nation. And this piece is a very subtle piece. It's what you enter in a room. It is just large black panels, and you think it's okay, it's like plain simple, but they're very heavy by the visuality, and they're hung onto the wall in slight, not very low, but high, and almost supposedly being referring to great power, like by the presence. And when you turn around it, you see it's heated and it is burning, and there is red light coming out of it. And it's a rather subtle comment on this relationship between the center and the periphery. And again, this center is not something which is, you know, I'm not interested, like in the girls, though I have many dreams. I'm interested in larger structures that we have, as which can be very personal, but which can also, like 11-year-old girls' aspirations and dreams of a country. Because, you know, I've sort of grown up in the situation where people think art is far away from politics, or politics is not part of our everyday life. Because we think like that, there is breakdown of change. Change does not take place because we think change is far away. So I become more and more interested in the larger structure, where you can map yourself onto, a person can be mapped onto a nation or into any different structure. So this particular piece has to do with what you see in front of you is blank and clean and majestic, apparently. But what you see behind is a strait of, it's like a swarm or a multitude, which is out there. It is present. It is what is not visible to you. And it is in a state of great change, and which will affect the center. It is about the periphery, the 90%, which again you can map onto the mind, that is not present, which is not visible. but it is present. And it is a moment of great change. For example, you can map onto the millions of people who are migrating to the cities, and that mass is changing. But it could be a person migrating from a small village in Bombay, or it could be somebody who's migrating from India to Europe, or somebody from East Europe to West Europe, or it could be somebody in America migrating from a certain class to another class. I mean, it has to do with a class of people who are on the outside in various ways. And it also has to do with the notion of freedom, that human beings are by default, whether we like it or not, people who want to be free. But to think of evolution, my memory is not my own memory, but my memory is more than 200,000 years old. I inherit my memory. And in terms of growth, we as people will move, and we as people will change, and we as people will have to break down structures. It's not got to do one against the other, but every structure has to change. So it comes across with that. And on that, yes, one has sort of through another project which is recently on right now in Paris, which I was interested in the psychology of fear and prejudice, and for which had met Noam Chomsky and worked with Mazarin Banerjee. So I mean, it's sort of in one circle going around there. Yeah, yeah. If you see my practice, there are times I've been on the streets selling a bottle like Blame to people, or there are times where I have worked with an organization called Majlis, and we produced a children's game CD and marketed it. But there is also the Tryst with Destiny, which is a song singing and nobody is listening. It is also a comment on art. There's often a reversal comment in my, it's my question too, it's not my answer, about I myself wonder, because there is great hope, and we often talk about art being independent, but all said and done, I mean, just right now in Continue, I was reading a book on multiples, just in that book, and I opened the first few pages, and it spoke about how in the 60s and 70s artists were making multiples. It's about Multiples by Parkett, and how quickly the market took over. So, you know, not just in the art, if you look in the nation state concept, how the left has kind of become suddenly not something whom you trust. There has been corruption even within the left. So communism became a bad word. So, you know, like the people who are fighting for rights in the villages, when you read about them in newspapers, they are called the evil Maoist. Because there has been a corruption, there has been a violence. Today, fights which were for freedom have used violence. And today that, and often in many cases, violence has sort of become, it's become very troublesome. I mean, it's killing people finally for whatever rights that you're fighting. So the independence which we hope, like whether it is in art or in these various structures, I am myself as much despaired, and I am wondering what's going on, because we do hope for art to be a larger social change, but one finds more and more, yes, there is art which goes to museums, but how many people go to museums? So as much as one aspires for that, today in 2008, it is the dominant market that dominates. So even in India, the state is not interested in contemporary art. So art, which is so precious, because it is today the only, amongst the only few places where you have independent thought, where most other means of media are completely consumed by the corporate or the political, there is such distress because where is the viewer? You know, how do we circulate? How do we distribute? Because we are so alone. So I don't know, art as social change is so, I mean, it is very crucial. I would not say artists stop working art. I mean, I would say one has to do, because there are several, it is also that it's the possibility you can sense. And I do feel in the larger structure of time, it does push. Like if you see the times when in, say in Italy, an artist was hired to paint the church, or in India where artists were used to carve temples and their hands were cut. But today an artist can be a superstar. You know, there's a class change of the artist. The artist is no longer somebody whom you dictate to just for his skills, but the artist is somebody who can have his voice and comment. So yes, over like some 300 years, there has been a social change, but maybe the change is not as much as it could possibly have. But that change has not got to do with the individual dream. It has to do with the collective dream. And somewhere always one has seen again and again, in collective turns out to be ego, and in ego turns out to be corruption. And then the vulnerability of the human self, you know. Well, actually, my thing is a comment on the loss, actually. For me, it comes from sort of growing up in school and also seeing icons of the three monkeys of Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi is the father of nation, and who did single-handedly bring about a huge amount of change. And 60 years, this loss again has to be trist. And so it says, see no evil, speak no evil, and hear no evil. And in all good sense, he has taught that. And when I think of this, I also think of the fiberglass cheap maquettes we get of these monkeys on the streets. And also that these values don't mean so much more, because we've all moved towards a more capitalist, a more individual sense of this thing. And it's a choice that we've made as a nation, as a group of nations, or as individuals ourselves. I mean, it's not imposed upon us. And it has to do, therefore, with the loss of the collective, the loss of the state, or the loss of, social change. It says, like, it's a comment on, it's not in that way negative, it's a despair. It's saying that it feels sad that we choose not to hear, we choose not to see, we choose not to speak. And it's sad that how easily we can look away. And I don't think we can look away easily. I feel it is going to change. It is something which we will be affected by. It is that because there is a problem in one part of the country, that is why we have bombings in another part of the country. You had 1,25,000 dead in Kashmir. You had, 60,000 dead post-Iraq, in Iraq, post the US occupation in Iraq. And then you have 52 dead in London. And you have 2,500 something dead in New York. And 1,000 dead in Bombay. So you may choose not to look at certain areas, but don't think that it may not affect you in time to come. You know, it's going to gravitate the periphery whether we like it or not.